Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Harsimarbir Singh, co-founder of Pristine Care. Pristine Care is one of India's leading healthcare startups, which is transforming the way patients undergo surgeries. Pristine is slowly becoming the gold standard for patient experience, having reached this point by handcrafting the experience from end to end by doing things that do not scale and bringing operational excellence in the process. Harsh, one of the co-founders of Pristine, truly personifies the entrepreneurial spirit. He never let go of the entrepreneurial itch and kept at it, even after multiple not-so-successful attempts. Through this conversation with Harsh, you will get a flavor of his magnificently perseverant journey and the secrets to how Pristine has accomplished such scale and growth without compromising on quality. This discussion is also a pure masterclass on an execution-first culture and operational excellence. If you've ever thought of starting up, this conversation is perfect for you, as it provides the exact guardrails of what it means to tread on this journey and be successful at it. Thus, without further ado, let's dive in to the 58th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, handcrafted with Harsh Singh of Pristine Care. Thank you so much, Harsh, for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure and a pure honor for me to be able to host you.
No problem at all. It's enjoyable to be here, and I'll be glad to share some thoughts and very excited to, you know, learn new things, going through new experiences. So thanks for inviting me.
Glad to hear that, Harsh. And, you know, I want to get the ball rolling by talking about the precursor to the Pristine journey first, right? Because you've been vocal about the fact, and your journey is a testament to the fact that you've not given up, you've kept at it, and you've had these breadth of experiences that I'm guessing have now compounded in the way you're building Pristine, right? So if you can talk to us about how did your love for entrepreneurship really begin? What made you keep at it? And also how these cumulative experiences actually played out for you and continue to add on to your aura as a whole with Pristine. I think that would be great to get us started.
Sure. No, actually, so I think maybe a quick background. So I actually grew up in a small town in Ludhiana, Punjab. So there's a lot of entrepreneurial community out there. So you see, there is not a very organized job structure. There is no IT companies, no big MNCs of finance and stuff. So there's a lot of small-time entrepreneurs. So I think grew in that family and that ecosystem. So I think there was always that exposure. I think largely for me, the turning point in my life was, so I spent some time in the US, went to Duke University. And I think in the first, orientation, our dean, his name was Dr. Jeffrey Glass. And he comes to the podium and says, life is a marathon and not a sprint. And I was like, what are you guys thinking, right? I'm thinking of finishing this school, going to Silicon Valley or going to New York and having a great life. And you are saying life is a marathon. It didn't occur. I was just hardly, 20 something. So it was a very different point. But I think then during the course of those orientation sessions, we had some folks come in from very large companies, from Google, from Facebook, Airbnb. All of this is like 10 years ago. Airbnb was very young. Google, of course, was very established, but still probably very different from today. So was YouTube. And I think listening to those folks, suddenly it felt so real. You know, being in India in 2008, it felt like that startups or the big companies are supposed to be established by folks in the West, and they will enter India, and or they'll be a business family out of a Tata or a Reliance. It's not our job. But I think when I was in that community and met these folks who are so real, like, you know, wearing a flip-flop or a t-shirt or a torn jeans, and, you know, having that stupid phone call during the interaction, just it made it so real. And I think that changed my thought process like drastically. It suddenly felt like that we can create businesses or products for the world. I was involved in everything on campus in entrepreneurship. I was an ambassador for entrepreneurship for my program. I started a consulting club, which was technically my first startup or the first thing I had started. So I think I had a phenomenal time. I was working in investment banking. And was heading to San Francisco to start my full-time role. And I had these 2 months in between. I spent some time with a friend of mine at IIM Ahmedabad that we were working on a stupid fuel cell technology. We didn't even understand it that much. We thought we'd write a cool paper, get some credits. But I think during the journey, we ended up learning more about India's electricity theft. Yeah, bijli ki chori, right? It's almost like $25 billion of electricity theft annually. And this is like 10 years ago, that number would have grown by now. And we felt, hey, is there a better way to solve it? In those 2 months interim, when I was supposed to take up my full-time role and, I was doing the internship, I think the momentum and the passion became so big that rather than accepting the role, I came back to India and started my first company with a very close friend of mine called Heidenberg, which was in electricity theft detection. Of course, we started with, like I said, maybe fuel cell production, ended up doing analytics. We ran that for nearly 1.5-2 years. We developed some really cool software, really cool intelligence, analytics platform. We worked with Delhi government, Punjab government, Nagpur government, and did a lot of work. But I think ended up sort of getting caught up in the way, a bureaucracy is supposed to function. And as a young person, you are like, we were guys with a backpack. We would climb walls in the time somebody would move our file. And it felt that this was not a culture we were able to adjust. And I think year and a half making no money, that sort of venture sort of folded up. Did a couple of things, started a mobile couponing business, which was in 2013 when Flipkart Zomato also did not have an app. It was mobile first, location first, hyper local. It was slightly ahead of its time, but again, it didn't work out. And so did a couple of other things. But I think for 5 years, I started 3 companies, none of them worked. And after 5 years, I think I could have probably killed a person, but not start a company. I was so sure in my mind and ended up going to Urban Clap or Urban Company today, which I think is one of the most amazing companies which have ever come out of India, one of the most amazing founders. I think that company or that startup, it was pre-revenue, very young, hardly a year into operation, that allowed me to actually continue my startup journey with a lot of support. There was capital, there was HR, there were smart folks. So there was a lot of support ecosystem. And I think that nurtured my, more my entrepreneurial instincts a lot more than my own 5 years, and actually taught me a lot. But after, I think once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, I think after 2.5 years, that itch of starting out came back so handsomely that it was literally hard to sort of be focused in office, solve problems in office, and I felt like that I was maybe not as diligent and honest to my role as I was for 2 years. And I think that sort of led to one thing to the another to start Pristine Care. But I think to sort of summarize your question around where did the itch come in, I think it's like almost a Punjabi guy, why do you like aloo ka paratha? I don't know. Or a Gujarati guy, why do you like dhokla? It's hard to explain. It is like when you talk about the idea, when you think about it, it just gives you the kick. It just makes you inspired. It just makes you go for it. It just is so natural. And I think that is also very critical to me. I see a lot of folks actually start companies just because they see, founders raising capital, getting on a magazine cover or doing a story like we are doing right now. Then they see this and then they end up starting something out for most of the rewards and not necessarily for the tough parts of it. And I think that's when people give up. I think if it is not natural to you, don't do it. So I think it's just been so natural to me over the last 10 years that it is my second nature. And I think even here at Pristine today, we are 1200 folks. I think the culture is so entrepreneurial. Anybody who's actually not doing the original is actually not respected. So if you come up with an original idea and you have the leverage to go out and execute and fail, we don't fear failure. We failed so many times in my life that is the culture we love, we love. And I think that's what we are forthcoming. So I think it's more about ingrained rather than forced.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. Like so much of what you've said is such a great way to start, because the intrinsic motivation to start and the love for building, I think, is so evident just by your actions. I think your actions speak louder than the words. And it's a testament to the fact that if you're a real builder, you'll keep at it and you'll eventually find your way, which you have. And now coming to that side of it, right now with Pristine, right? So you told us about how you got here, but can you perhaps also talk to us about given that you were entering, let's say, an industry or, you know, surgeries, as they say, right? It was not the cool thing to do, right? It was not something you came from either, right? And there were so many, and it was not like there were incumbents to, let's say, do Me Too products from, right? So there were nothing of the kind, and it was uncharted territory that you took, right? So can you perhaps like just walk us through what clicked with Pristine? How did you like to begin with establish and come across the problem? Then what was your sense of validation and the early days of just going to that 0 to 1 journey, as they call it, right? You started with 3 founders. I remember you saying in a previous interview that everything was being done by the 3 of you, right? And from the smallest of things, right? You personify the fact that doing things that don't scale. So just like, I think a good overview of that entire starting out phase, which established the conviction that this is something that you've been very vocal about, the fact that you want to do this for the next 20, 25 years, right? And to see that conviction in your words speaks volumes. Just walk us through what got that conviction building.
Right. Yeah, I think it also, you know, you asked me a question around, you know, I'm not really, I think the question is I'm not from healthcare. And, you know, how does, in a very different industry, traditionally, you know, industry which also has not been very innovative. I think, you know, any industry, it's at the end of the day, a problem solving, right? At Urban Clap, I got a chance to build their beauty services business, which is more like salon at home or massage at home. I've never been to salon in my life. And coming from a Sikh faith, that was very, you know, that was an alien thing to me. And I remember when the co-founders at Urban Company or Urban Clap said that, hey, why don't you take up salon? I was like, dude, look at me. I don't know what getting a haircut means. And how can you ask me to build salon? And they say, hey, you know, maybe looks like there's nobody else right now. And you are the only person who doesn't have real thing going on in Urban Clap. Maybe you are the only free one. So I think that it's also a testimony to their culture, right? They didn't look at that, hey, is it a culture fit? They just felt that, hey, is it, it's a problem solving. So I think healthcare is similar. It's a problem solving for me. You know, I actually got exposed to healthcare, you know, few years back. So my both co-founders are also very, very close friends. One of them I know for nearly about 30 years. I used to hang out with him in Max. He was a doctor. He's a surgeon. His name is Vaibhav Kapoor. He was working at Max Gurgaon. We are based out of an NCR. So Max Gurgaon. And I used to hang out with him on Sundays when he would have slight work, you know, not really occupied at work. You know, after finishing work at Urban Clap or Urban Company, we used to work Monday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday. Sunday, probably 3-4 p.m., I had nothing else to do. And I would go to Max and hang out with him for 5-6 hours. For me, I think that's the first exposure of healthcare for me. I ended up marrying a doctor. So I think that became the second exposure. But I think more than that, I think the problem of Pristine or how it all got started, we actually don't have a very rosy story. Neither did we have one, neither did we build one to tell out the world, I guess. But honestly, the way it functioned is both my co-founders were starting out their own private practice. And both of them are amazing folks, amazing surgeons. And we are into surgery business. So both of them are amazing surgeons, very, very smart, very dedicated. One of the sharpest doctors I know, apart from my wife, I have to say that. Right. So they were starting their private practice. And I was like having that itch of doing something on my own. I said, hey, why don't we do it together? You know, maybe I can get some patients and maybe you can operate. That's all that really I can do. We really hadn't pinpointed the problem. I think it is just a friendship and not necessarily any whiteboarding, not any market sizing, not really 5-year projections. I was having such a strong itch to do out something on my own. And two of my closest friends were starting their sort of a private practice. Hey, why don't we do it together? We didn't really have the model or the business in mind. It's when we started, and we were so small, we started out of Gurgaon. It was a room of 10 by 10. And, you know, being in healthcare, we had we didn't even have a clinic of our own. So there was this polyclinic, which had like 5 chambers and 5 different doctors would come there. And the 3 of us would sit in that chamber. And if a patient would come out, you know, whoever patient is, would it be myself and the other doctor would come out. And then they would do the patient consult and then we would go in and sit there. Like, we didn't really have an office, but we were just 3 folks, very, very excited about what we wanted to do. I think because we were so small and there was that always, you know, being doctors, they were used to performing things themselves. And I came from a background where the only thing I really learned was go in the trenches and do it yourself. I think there was a culture of doing everything on our own. Very honestly, we couldn't afford it as well, right? So there was no chance. So if we all our savings, whatever little we had, were in it. So we said, yeah, let's just do everything ourselves. When we started handling patients, that is when we started seeing the real problems. you know, I remember there was a patient who was, you know, there was a surgery which was lined up, and that patient's son was in US. He calls us on the morning of the surgery. He said, "Hey, we'll have to cancel." I was like, "What's going on? You know, you have one patient and that is also canceling. Like you are like having a heart attack." I was like, "What's going on?" He said, "You know what? My mom and dad are in Noida. They're all by myself, and it's dad's procedure. And dad is having cold feet. He's not having, you know, he's unable to drive his own car. And he's, you know, he's getting maybe a little worked up." And I think in the spur of the moment, we said, "Hey, why don't we can pick him up from home? Like, that's fine. I mean, we'll go to Noida and pick him up and get him to Gurgaon. That's fine." He said, "If you can do that, then it's okay." He's like, "Oh, sure, why not? It helps us save a customer or a patient in our case." We actually drove that customer from home, from his home, the couple, to Gurgaon. And then during the journey, we ended up realizing I had actually never had any family member undergo procedure. Neither I had ever undergone a procedure. So it's something, you know, the hard part about our business is we cannot go out to somebody and say, "Why don't you experience our service?" Like, that's the challenge, right? And you can't really manufacture it, right? But during the journey, I think what we learned was that the morning of the surgery, while it is a simple procedure, you fear going to a hospital, you fear going to an operation theater. It's a fearful process. And he said, "Hey, why can't we do a pickup for every patient?" And I think we started testing it out. And today, every patient, Christine, we'll handle, you know, nearly probably 20,000, cab rides for our patients. And we don't charge them for it. Picking them from home and getting them to our clinics or our hospitals, just because healthcare can be, you know, painful. And similarly, another incident happened, a patient, we were taking him for a surgery and the admission was supposed to happen. And my friend, my Weber was supposed to do the surgery. So as a doctor, he's going upstairs. I'm sitting out there waiting for the procedure to happen because I had nothing else to do. And we saw that patient had to spend 3 hours for the admission. There was online paperwork, stuff like that. Now, somebody who's going to go for a surgery is sitting on the reception for 3 hours. It felt unreal. You know, at Urban Club, if a customer had one complaint, like the entire company would shake up. And here was a customer suffering for 3 hours. It was unreal to us. And I think, just after the surgery, we went to the reception counter and said, "What was the problem? What were the challenges? What were the delays?" And we started testing out that how can we solve it for a patient. Today, while we are not perfect, but nearly 85-90% of our patients get admitted to a hospital, one of our partner hospitals, in under 30 minutes. We do every paperwork in advance. Again, I think it's work in progress, but every paperwork is DocuSigned. It's done a night in advance. That's how we do it. Similarly, insurance clearance. You know, when we had to get our first patient's insurance cleared, we went to the hospital, submitted the documents, waited for 24 hours. And we said, "This is crazy. You know, I'm like here, our heart is palpitating that will this guy accept a procedure from us and we'll be able to convert him?" You know, you are thinking like a little middle entrepreneur. And now they're saying, "Come back after 24 hours. This is like not done. Today, you know, we built a very smart data analytics, entire ecosystem that we can tell you if your insurance is covered in under 20 minutes. Right. So I think it's the joy of doing everything ourselves from early on, which taught us that journey of a patient, right from finding the doctor, coming to the hospital, getting an admission, getting his insurance, actually getting the surgery done, you know, going back home, coming for a follow-up is so painful. Diagnosis in between. We said, why can't we take care of the entire thing? You know, I'll tell you another example. We had a patient and, you know, she went home and, my co-founder said, you know, I fear that she will not do her exercises and not take care of her diet well. We said, okay, why don't we inform her? And he said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, we called the patient every day for the next 7 days, telling them what the diet and the recovery. I think we ended up realizing the biggest reason patients don't recover as well is because they don't follow the instructions. Again, we have not solved the problem up, but every patient in Pristine is actually nearly forced for a follow-up. If they can't come to a clinic, it's done online, but they are not charged for it. Very unreal for the healthcare world. They are not charged for it, but we almost force every patient to do a follow-up. And, you know, one of our co-founders, Dr. Garima, is, you know, we are so passionate about solving this that a co-founder puts in a lot of her time just on this problem. And again, you know, just solving the journey problem of a patient and looking everything from our own perspective. We have seen all those problems ourselves. Today, even when a senior person joins Pristine, doesn't matter any level, but even the senior most level, he's actually sent out to, you know, go to the hospital, see a surgery, sit inside a clinic, go inside an admission line, and actually do everything yourself. I think there is no better advice we can ever share with the founders. Do everything yourself. Most of these things will never, ever scale. Like, we picking up our patients ever cannot scale. But today, there's an ecosystem which does that. But we know it because we did it ourselves. So do everything yourself and do things which don't scale.
That's brilliant. I think all of that, I mean, the candid flow of thought in saying that there will never be a formula. You have to just go out there, find your own formula and just like do it yourself is so sublime to witness. I mean, I love those humble beginnings and all of the stories you mentioned, like they're a testament to how amazing the culture and fundamentals are at Pristine. And we'll talk about it more, but I just want to understand therein, right? Like, so when I was hearing you, the question in my mind that was revolving is that given that, so Pristine is also known for, and you've emphasized on it yourself, on great customer experience, in this case, patient experience, right? And so given that there are so many moving parts to the operational overflow, right? Like, so many of the things that you told us, for the patient, it may now seem like it's a very easy process because of Pristine, but internally, I'm sure there has to be a method to the madness, right? So can you like talk to us about how now you've been able to maybe create a lot of sync between the multiple moving parts? How do you look at organizational design and how have you been able to scale some of these things to ensure that when you're building for the 20 years, it just gets done in a very fundamentally smooth manner internally as well? I think that would be great to observe.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, today Pristine has nearly 45 odd teams and every team has been born out of one of those challenges. And, you know, every patient who comes to Pristine, one of our, you know, when you talk to our patients, of course, we are making mistakes. Of course, there is, I think we have done probably 0% and there is 100% improvement necessary. But I think when you speak to some of our best patients, they will always come back and tell you, I didn't even realize that my surgery was done. You know, in a local language, they'll say, mujhe pata hi nahi chala meri surgery kab ho gayi. And I think that is music to our ears. So every patient in Pristine is given a care coordinator or a care buddy who's available as a guide, you know, 24/7 to the patient. Because think about it. It is like saying most patients actually undergo less than one surgery in a lifetime. They really don't have a prior experience. So the path is so, you know, there is so much anxiety. There is so much of unknown. Ambiguity that how will it function? I have to get to a doctor. I have to get to a diagnosis. I have to get insurance. I have to get, you know, my, you know, pre-anesthesia checks. I have to, you know, talk about my, if I have diabetes, if I have, you know, I'm taking a, you know, insulin injection, like patient doesn't even know that he has to talk about these issues and solve these problems. So I think, you know, every patient interesting today gets a care buddy, which sort of fronts this entire piece. But I think on the back end is the operational design, which you, you know, hinted at. Now, you know, we are an ops business. And I think, you know, an anecdote, when we were at Urban Club, I ended up, you know, we were having this fiery conversations with our founders there. And it ended up saying, hey, we built a tech company. And I think very quickly, you know, Abhiraj, one of the founders, said, yeah, lekin aisa lag raha hai yaar, hame toh sabse pehle salon chalana seekhna padega, right? If you're building beauty services or if you're doing an AC repair, you actually have to go out and see how it is done. So I think at that moment, suddenly technology becomes the biggest enabler, but you have to be operationally solid. And you know, the second thing which you'll see with most operationally heavy companies such as ourselves, Urban Club, Flipkart of the world, by technology that is at it, business and operations is always running ahead because you know all the companies which succeed are able to do it because they are able to execute very well. And, you know, I think a famous, you know, we talk about here in Pristine often, you know, ya to banda galat hai, ya dhanda galat hai, right? If you are saying the problem is right, then you cannot blame the technology can't solve the problem. Technology is an automation. Every time we look at technology, it's an automation, right? So everything we do in Pristine, first, it is done by ourselves. Somebody will do it. A lot of times it was the founder, but that culture is not changed. Even today, when we launch a new category, if we launch a new, you know, operational sort of process, it is done by the senior most, probably the senior most person in the company. Sometimes the founders, sometimes the you know, leadership team, sometimes a media leadership team. So somebody will do it. So I think, you know, talking about the operational design, when we started building our ops, the journey did not happen like today itself. We, you know, we started, the step one was we started doing everything ourselves. There was a time between the three of us, 50 people reported to us and all of them were 50 teams. So every person was just one team. Was technically we were trying to figure out 50 or maybe 100 problems. Then we solved one problem. When we solved one problem, it looks like this is getting solved. But as we are scaling, now we need more people to solve it. Then we put in two more folks to solve that problem. When that problem started, when the business started scaling, that problem started scaling, we said, okay, now we have solved it at least 100 times. Now we know how it's going to be solved even in our sleep. Now let's build tech over it. So I think that's sort of a journey for us. First, one leadership does it. Then we scale it to probably three or four folks. When we have done it 100 times over, we say, now we know what is the product. Now we know what is the spec. Now we know what is the problem solving. So we are not guessing. And I think that culture, I think, has stayed with us, that everything is done by one leader followed by two folks. And then we build a technology out of it. So I think that's how our operations has today, you know, swelled up. I'll give you an example. During lockdown, last year we started, actually a little bored last year, we started facing this challenge that patients were getting delayed. While we were booking their cabs, they were getting delayed. Then we said, hey, now patients are getting delayed, their admission gets delayed. If their admission gets delayed, their insurance gets delayed. If their insurance gets delayed, their surgery gets delayed. And surgery gets delayed, doctor's schedule goes over top. So it was a cascading effect. So we put, again, one person to say, why don't you make sure the patient reaches on time? So he said, okay, I'm going to ensure that the patient reaches on time. When we started doing that, we ended up realizing there were so many patients that he was not able to manage it. So we put three smart people. When we started to solve, why doesn't the patient on time? We said, okay, we are not booking the cab on time. Then say, okay, once the cab is on time, our admission gets delayed. Why does our admission get delayed? Because there was a paperwork which was not done. Okay, let's solve the paperwork. Now our paperwork is done. Then why are we delayed? Oh, the special equipment for the surgery did not flow in. Then we created an information system for it, that how does the information for the equipment flow in. Then said, okay, now it is moved in. Now what happened? Oh, the hospital got delayed. How do we make sure hospital ecosystem information is not a bias? We created a hospital app. So the ecosystem started, the information started to flow to the hospital. Then we said the doctor is getting delayed. Okay, how do we make sure the doctor doesn't get delayed? Then we started solving. We have a doctor app. Every surgeon is on app. He sees his entire history on the app. EMR, everything is on the app. So we started created alerts in doctor's app. So I think as we started to do this, we ended up realizing today that the team is about 40 people, but they're handling probably 30 times the size, but it is still inefficient, but there's now a lot of technology which has built it. And I think that's the story of every, you start to put it out, you start to solve at scale, bit technology out of it, and then bring the efficiencies. And I think everything sort of flows like that. Today, there's a team which, or there's a team slash process. There is either a team or there's a technology process working it, which schedules the OPD, or there's an automatic scheduler. Somebody ensures that the patient reaches on time. Again, it's a technology process. Somebody ensures that 100 clinics are functional. So there's a clinic team which makes sure all the clinics are open. The information is flowing. The doctors are there. The receptionists are there. The clinics are stocked. Somebody ensures that the payment happens at the clinic. So there's a technology payment process. Then somebody ensures, or some process ensures that, if there's a special equipment necessary, that request flows into the ecosystem. Somebody ensures that equipment is transported from one of our warehouses to the hospital. Somebody ensures that there is, diagnosis being done. So we have a lot of diagnostic partners, so there is a booking process. Somebody ensures that insurance is getting cleared. Today, we clear an insurance in 30 minutes. So there's an insurance. There's entire work we've done in insurance. We have a huge insurance team and a lot of work. So I think, I can go on and on and on, but it's a complete process which has evolved from that three-member team, which the three co-founders.
Wow, I think it's just so overwhelming to just get an inside view of how well things are functioning now and how you started again. I see this evident need to just solve the smaller blocks as opposed to just doing everything at once and just like targeting each problem one at a time so that the mountain eventually gets crossed as well. So I think that's wonderful to hear, Harsh. I think thanks for that walkaway. That was truly wonderful to hear. Further, just like a very quick follow-up to that is, right, you know, you've been very vocal in terms of the strong values that Pristine has always had, right? And some of which you mentioned in this conversation as well, right? The bias for action, the strong fundamentals that the company has, and everybody being a hands-on player. But talking about the other fundamentals as well, right? You've always been very particular about strong unit economics. You've always been very particular about how the team shapes up and things like that. Can you perhaps just give us a quick walkthrough of how the culture, and especially given that you're at a juncture where the company is blitz scaling, as they call it, right? How do you scale up culture, ensure that the core values are intact, and ensure that speed or scale does not become or block your view of the cultural values at the company? I think that would be phenomenal to hear.
No, actually, I think, having failed three startups, you know, and from 2010 to 2015, saw three startups which went nowhere. You would have never heard of any of them. And then being part of Urban Club, a successful startup, you know, there's a lot of noise in failure, it's very hard to say what failed. But when you see some success and seeing that success at Urban Club or Urban Company, I think you learn tons. I think a lot of what I've learned has been shaped up through those last 10 years. So it's not really an overnight success. You know, of course, a lot of founders have had overnight success. Probably I'm not as smart as them. It took me a lot of time to sort of come to this level. But I think culture has been a super critical focus from day one. And for us, you know, even, you know, the culture starts from, first of all, hiring the right people. We are 1,200 in number today, and every person who has joined Pristine off-roll or on-roll has been interviewed by one of the three founders, right? And I think that it starts from there. Even today, you know, from 9 p.m., I have to take interviews because there is no other way, right? Of course, I think as we are scaling now more, we are trying to build even more smarter processes. But I think for the largest time, every person who's joined Pristine, was interviewed by one of the three co-founders, right? That is a culture fit, right? The second point is absolutely knowing, you know, what you're looking for. You know, one not very smart thing we did very, very early on, all three of us were married. And we said, yeah, it's very hard. You know, you have to work Monday to Sunday. You are putting, coming at and early in the morning and leaving at 10 p.m., 10, 11 p.m. And it's hard to deal, you know, ecosystem at home. It's tough for your partner. And he said, if we have to, you know, while we might have made peace with our partners and they have been super, super supportive, that might not necessarily always happen. So I think for the first nearly about a year, we had this stupid policy, unknown stupid policy. It was never written anywhere. We said we used to hire zero married people, like zero. There's not even one married person getting hired. I remember, Sequoia coming to us and saying, dude, you need to change this. You need to, start thinking more maturely. And today it is so different. I think 40% of our workforce is, married. And I think we've learned. But I think, you know, as an early company, I never built a company which was, you know, at this scale. So I think it was some of those cultural things and mistakes which you do early on too. Sometimes we miss talent as well. But I think so hiring, every interview done by one of the three co-founders was the first. The second thing is, in the interviews, for us, talent is a filter, right? You have smart background. He's done some good work, with some startups or some background. You filter that on first step. The second step is this guy or a girl a culture fit? So I think we have been, we used to have this, again, a very funny way of checking people on currentometer. We said, does this guy have enough current? Because in startups, you have to steamroll so many things, right? If you are, very docile and you are waiting for things to happen, like you can't get done much. We said, anyone we hire should be capable of, doing things themselves. If this guy doesn't fit there, or he doesn't have a score high on a currentometer, let's not hire, okay? And we did those stupid things early on. They were not very smart, by the way, but helped us, okay? So I think the second thing was making sure that, making sure the culture is ahead of the talent. The talent is a filter. We said, make sure culture is hired. The third part is putting down what your culture is and then communicating it super, super strongly. You know, we very early on, while we defined our core values in probably later time, but very early on, we said three things cannot change. Extreme ownership. I'll give you an example today. Let's say there is a team who is running a P&L leadership, right? Let's say that there's a category head who runs a business or in our case, let's say a disease line, if his job is to ensure he has to deliver a certain number, and he has to solve a lot of problems. He has to solve marketing, he has to solve technology, he has to solve operations, he has to solve insurance, he has to solve, you know, medical directorate because you have a lot of doctors, and he has to solve a couple of other things. Now, his success is dependent on solving all of things. Now, that guy, if he has a target, he can never come back, you know, to the leadership and come back and say, I couldn't do this because technology team did not live up. Marketing team did not live up. That is unacceptable. And that is very, very early on. Even today, you know, while we are now slightly more structured, never ever will a category head, a senior manager or a GM or a, you know, a VP, nobody will ever say, I missed my target because a different team did not do a job. That I think has been a culture. So, you know, just extreme ownership was something we were so critical. The second thing which we were so critical about was, you know, doers in the trenches. Would you do this yourself? Would you talk to the patient? Would you, apart from being the doctor, because that is, you can't do that. Everything else, you know, think about it. When we started, my both co-founders were doing the surgery themselves. I was doing, you know, the BD, the technology, the marketing, the fundraise myself. It was like all three of us were a unit. And said, if we, like, had we not built a company, we would have built a very, very profitable clinic. We would have not been required as staff, and we would have done phenomenally well in our lives, right? So I think we understood the importance of being a unit and being self-sufficient so early on that we would almost test folks that, will this guy work in the trenches? You know, we used to give them, you know, tasks and projects to work on very early. A lot of folks have talked about this. We will give them a case study and stuff like that. You know, we used to candidly do interviews at 11 p.m. to see, will this guy go beyond? Will this guy, you know, and, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about work-life balance, and I think as we are getting there, we are improving. But, you know, when you are starting up, you want everybody to be putting in probably 28 hours in your 24 hours. I mean, that's the honesty. I know a lot of people talk about it differently, but, you know, the honesty is we were overworked. But then we wanted to build what a larger company had built in 30 years. We said, how can we build in 5 years? We had to. And there's never been a Google or a Facebook which has been, you know, born out of a 9-to-5 job. It's just almost impossible, right? So we would test for ownership. We would test for, you know, folks doing things in trenches. The third thing we would test, like almost like test in interviews questions, was collaboration. If you notice, we knew that if we'll scale, technology will always come in. We will have to work with people. And in India, we still lack, you know, there's a lot of technology to be built, right? I think if a person cannot work with another person, he will definitely fail. So we used to test collaboration, like almost try to find out those pearls in their knowledge that how about doing this? How about doing that? So I think those, extreme ownership, working in the trenches, and, collaboration. We used to call this, there's a very famous quote by, I think, one of the co-founders, which says, the brilliant jerk is useless. If that guy cannot collaborate, then he's a failure. So I think these three were our sole point of checks early on. Will he have extreme ownership? Will he, have work in the trenches and go beyond? And will he collaborate with people? I think over time, we had two more which came in, which was patient obsession, because everything in Pristine, if it's right for the patient, let's do it now, we'll think it later. And the third or fifth part is integrity, right? I mean, as you are scaling the business, you are having so much faith on everybody around. Like if somebody wants to defraud you on numbers, on data, on money, there is loopholes because we are not very solid, right? So I think integrity has become super critical, especially for the patients, because there's somebody's health at stake. So I think that two things have added on to our repertoire. But, collaboration, extreme ownership, and, working in the trenches, that was our culture. So hiring right, checking for this, and over-communicating it. Like we would over-communicate this. We wanted to make sure anybody who comes in the company knows this. Even today, this is taught in our onboarding session. But very early, we used to be onboarding session. We communicated it like crazy. Like you would not believe how crazy we were on this. You know, in fact, a lot of our, when one used to lose temper and all those things, it was because something failed. I think the fourth part is, how do you promote this? The only way to promote this is when you showcase, success to somebody who displays these qualities. So I think we were lucky enough to hire a lot of folks who were amazing. a lot of our initial leadership is here, but we have been, you know, taking them through the ranks higher and higher because they have been showing these, you know, and I can talk about my culture values on the wall, but if we don't promote folks who have shown those values, then it doesn't mean it's worth. So I think just promoting people and then highlighting again, you know, so I think that has worked for us. And then I think the final thing on all this is leading from the front. I think every leader we talk about, we just are, you know, I'll tell you one of our finance guys today, he was in office pacing up and down on a Sunday and not really actually doing a lot. He was helping out his wife at home on the phone on a Sunday. I was like, you know, if you're occupied, why don't you go home? And he said, yeah, you know, my team is sitting in office. I have done my work. I need to make sure they finish it. And I'm not able to help out here, but I can't go home because they're here. Now, a lot of folks question this is the right way. But the point is that is, you know, that is the belongingness. That is the ownership. That is the collaboration. That is the culture which is communicated by the leaders right at the top. And I think you see that coming on. One of we've hired a leader from a, you know, from an amazing company right at the top. And he was doing patient calls yesterday because in one of the meetings, we ended up saying, yeah, a patient gets so tired. What do you think? And he said, hey, we don't know. We need to go talk to the patient. So he's actually talking to the patient himself. So I think just bringing those values, promoting them, over-communicating them and leading from the front. As founders, as leadership, whenever we've had a leadership conversation, that's all we tell them. Lead from the front. So I think that's worked for us.
Wow, this is brilliant. I think these are pearls of wisdom for anybody listening because this was like almost a masterclass on culture because so much of what you said, right? A rocket ship will only get built if you have all of these factors ingrained and then packaged into one and then reflected by action, which is so true and so reflective of what Pristine is able to do. But I really mean this. This was wonderful to hear, Harsh, and very, very understanding of just like how we can, as operators, also just inculcate these properties, right? Anybody who wants to be a part of a rocket ship has to have all of these functions, the commitment, the action, the will to just do it. I think all of those are amazing factors. This has been a lovely conversation, but as we move on to the closing parts, right, Harsh, I just want to quickly take a stab at, you spoke about the overworking and it resulting in that 5 years of the 30 years in 5 years, right? And the growth has been no secret to anybody, right? Pristine has grown exponentially in the last couple of years and we've seen something unprecedented, right? Like without even going into the numbers, we can safely claim that, you know, your scale in terms of the teammates and everything has grown rapidly. And so has the penetration in the underdeveloped cities or the tier 2-3 cities of the country, as we call it, right? So talk to us about how you've been able to manage these growth loops and maybe standardize experience across the board, right? Because eventually, and I'm sure the vision with Pristine is also to just deliver this best-in-class experience to each and every patient in the country, right? Despite Nagpur, Indoor, Patna, Kolkata, Mumbai, Delhi, right? So how do you ensure that? And how do you ensure the growth that you have gone in the path of and make sure it becomes repeatable bit by bit?
Right. Yeah, no, actually, I think, you know, a few things have worked for us. First of all, you know, today we operate in 30 odd cities. Which includes the 7 big metros, but then it has an Indore, you talked about Indore, it has a Patna, it has a Ranchi. We went actually live in Ranchi a few weeks ago. It has a Guwahati, it has a Jammu, it has a Ludhiana, which is our hometown. It has a Bhubaneswar, which is a slightly larger town. It has a Bhopal, which is a small town. It has a Coimbatore, which is one of our largest cities down south. So I think we've been able to expand today. 30% of our business almost comes from our tertiary cities. So I think, you know, we've done fairly well. You know, when we started Pristine, one of the guiding lights, which I'll share with you, you know, almost like our why are we doing this? Somebody asked us, like, why are you really doing this? You know, I'll tell you something. We, you know, growing up in the north, having exposure in Delhi, always ended up seeing that if you're a somebody special, right? You go to a hospital and you know somebody in the hospital, you will get a bigger room, you will get a quick admission, you will get a longer consult from a doctor. I mean, it extends to everywhere. You know, if you know somebody at a restaurant and there is no space, and they will find space for you. If you know somebody at a school, your child will get admission. I think at some point, on a very personal note, I felt that, you know, I was a very misfit in this kind of give favor, take favor, or scratch, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. or you know kind of an environment. I just felt super uncomfortable almost asking for favors also, you know, in this regard that, hey, I am special, so why don't you make way for us? And I think as patients, we felt that patient especially is in pain or in discomfort during a procedure. But if a patient knows somebody important at a hospital or he knows the doctor, he gets 5-star facilities. I think the vision for us is that is unfair. Healthcare should be fair for everyone. So irrespective of your background, your culture, your socioeconomic status, your gender, your disease, you know, your ticket size, you know, if you are a patient who's going to be billing to the hospital a few lakh rupees, he's a master guy, right, in a bigger hospital. Irrespective of all this, a patient should get 5-star opinion. 5-star sort of a treatment, you know, every patient. And I think we have extended that beyond our metro. So even in Bhopal, the same medical technology is available as it is in Gurgaon. Even in Guwahati or in Coimbatore, or in Chandigarh, it is the same quality of doctor with similar background and experience as it is in Bombay. Even in Nagpur, every patient gets a cab ride as he gets in Bangalore. Every patient gets a free follow-up that is there in, let's say, Hyderabad. Every patient gets a priority when he's in uncomfortable over other patients who might be waiting in line, just because he's in discomfort in Chennai as it is in a small town like Chandigarh. So I think we've been able to do that. And I think that's something we are super passionate about. So I think that helps when you know clearly in your mind, this is what you stand for. The second part is, you know, when you start doing this, you start making playbooks. Another thing which has worked for most startups is when we were able to make a playbook in Gurgaon, we said, whenever we go live in another city, we will use this playbook, right? So that doesn't change. So it doesn't matter what city is it, the playbook remains same. If a playbook is updated in Chandigarh, it will be updated in Coimbatore, it will be updated in Nagpur, Bombay, Bangalore, Chennai, everywhere. So I think having those playbooks is a huge sort of a, it's actually a very simple thing, but it helps crazily. Now, everybody knows that if a new city like Ranchi is being launched, there needs to be these 20 things which needs to be done from a playbook. Otherwise, the city doesn't get live. Like, we have put those filters in the system that if this playbook is not ticked, the system doesn't go live. So that establishes that everything which is happening in Gurgaon or Delhi is happening in a smaller town as well. So I think that playbook helps a lot, like crazy. The second, and I think even more important part of doing anything, not just in Pristine, in any other startup, is actually, building a phenomenal team. And I think we've been very, very lucky from early on, the leadership, the mid-tier leadership, the senior leadership, every leadership in Pristine, I think 99% of the success goes to them, to the team as a whole, and we are part of that team, and probably 1% goes to our destiny. Everything else is, you know, is faff. Everybody works hard. Everybody is smart. There are a lot of people who have smart ideas. There are a lot of people who have capital, but not everybody is able to execute, right? So it's 90%, 99% of the team, and 1% is probably destiny that we've been able to do this. So having a great team, communicating them our ethos, you know, knowing your identity, and then creating playbooks. So it doesn't matter where you go live, the playbook needs to be followed. And if you have that in your mind, I think that works out. So I think I would encourage, we encourage in our internal ecosystem, I would encourage every startup, and I think we are learning daily from some of the largest startups in the world today, build those playbooks and build those filters in the system that if this playbook is not live, an ecosystem, a city, a territory, a category, a geography, a product cannot go live. And if you do that, I think, you know, and then you create those checks, right? You create those reportings, you create those metrics to do A's. If something is broken, let's solve it. So I think that works out.
Awesome. I think that's fabulous to hear. Just the fact that, you know, the stronger fundamentals that get carried on to ensure that you're not going to compromise on quality just on the basis of growth, that I think is so ingrained and just going to, you know, make sure that everything falls in place. I think that's wonderful to hear. And all of the things that you mentioned, of course, like establishing those playbooks and then executing on them is a must. Great, this has been wonderful. And as we close down the episode, I just want to take a couple of minutes to just talk about you now and maybe a couple of questions personal to you that help us understand and more so learn from your values, right? So you spoke about, you know, somebody asked you why are you doing this, right? But I'll flip the question and ask you a very fundamental, so to say, life question without getting philosophical in nature, of course. But the point being that, you know, given that a large part of this has happened, you've been very conviction-led, you've been very humble in this conversation, and that shows. But what eventually does this all compound towards, right? So we understand from a pristine perspective, you're working towards solving the healthcare spectrum for the country, right? And which is a noble as well as great tangible goal. But what for you personally compounds to success? What does success eventually mean for you? And what is that North Star that you personally are chasing? I think that'd be great to just hear from you.
See, here's the thing. I think, you know, when I was growing up, you know, like I was telling you, I come from a small town. There were a lot of entrepreneurs who were successful there. You know, used to run some sort of a manufacturing or a factory, as they would call it. And I thought that was the only business in the world, that if you want to be successful in life, like, try starting a factory. And I would try to talk to my dad and try to visit some of these factories. He was in that business there. He could have a lot of access. So I would go and visit them, and I would feel very happy about it. That, oh, looks like something, you know, there is so many, there's cycle parts, you know, textile, food. I saw so many of them that are finished products. I felt very happy about it till I learned, went to US, and the thought process completely changes. And I was growing up, I'm a very fond of, I'm a foodie, and, you know, it sort of also reflects, not the most fittest, I think, as of now. I thought the only thing I will ever do in my life is, and this is actually candid, right? Anything I would do in my life is probably put a paratha factory, and that would give me happiness. And I think when we raised capital for the first time at Pristine, I thought I got a space to open that factory. And when we got some more folks and we started, I thought the factory expanded. So I think I'm that a lot of people talk about that kid in a candy store. I think I'm a kid in a paratha factory for me. It's a very ingrained happiness of being able to do this. And sometimes it is unjustified. You know, you can't really put it in words that, you know, of course it has brought financial success. It has brought some recognition. But whenever I'm coming to office every day, that the joy of just being able to build this, take this further, and seeing that sort of that playground becoming bigger, it is almost a drive that it is very, very hard to sort of comprehend. I don't know if there's a better answer to this, but it's just so much happiness. It is like somebody who likes, let's say, you know, playing a sport, playing a soccer or playing a cricket, and whenever they step onto the playing field, they feel happiness, they feel relaxed, they feel driven, they feel passionate, they feel like going at it. I think whenever I'm stepping inside office or, you know, thinking about Pristine, I feel driven, I feel passionate, I feel like I'm going to play my favorite sport, I'm going to eat my favorite food, I'm going to have my favorite travel. It is just so much happiness that it doesn't feel like work. And I think for me, that is very, very critical. In terms of the North Star metrics or a very personal journey, I don't think I've sat down and thought about, hey, what is my North Star? But I think very early on, we saw that, the healthcare was broken. We, accidentally set foot in this industry. I mean, for me, it is still an accident. I'm not from healthcare. I think the fact that it was such a crazy big opportunity allowed us, said, hey, we can create a very, very good organization. We can create an organization which can have an impact, an organization which can actually stay on for probably 50, 100 years. I don't know if it's longer. It's not supposed to be an organization which stays for a few couple of 40 years, 3-4 years, and then is sold or shut down and stuff. I think that North Star of being able to build this bigger, we recently moved to our new office, and it was slightly bigger space. And I could see that most folks said, hey, this is a better place than the last one. Now, that was joy for me, that a lot of team, everyone, they had a bigger place, bigger playground to find. So I think whenever we expand, whenever we serve more patients, whenever we get a better feedback, we get a smile from a patient, a thanks from a doctor, you just feel that the playground is widened. When will that day come when I don't feel like widening this playground? I don't know. But I think every day my focus has been, how does this playground get widened? And to widen it, we have to make sure that the patient experience scales. That is number one priority. The team at Pristine scales. That is almost like a number two priority. That there is nothing better than the team. And the third part is that, you know, just the our values stay in place. I think everything else sort of takes care of itself. We build problem solve. We have smart folks. All of us are very honest. So that'll solve. But how do we make sure we are patient first? How do we make sure we are a team first? How do we make sure we are collaborating well and, you know, making sure that playground is getting wider? I think that just drive is a North Star for me. It's not evaluation. Maybe it's not the cities. It's not the geographies. It is just that playground is getting wider. You know, when we were three people, we said, hey, if we could get to 30 people, that would be great. When we were 30 folks and one city, we said, hey, we could get to two cities. That would be amazing. When we got to two cities, we said, can we do 10? And when we got to 10, he said, can we do 30? Today, I said, can we do 150? Right? When we got to 100 million valuation, he said, you know, valuation is a crazy number, right? I mean, you start thinking of those paper dollars, but they don't mean much. But when you think of one, say, can you get bigger? So I think it's that drive of expanding that playground and doing it well, I think that pushes you.
It's just so heartwarming to hear that the process and the value system is so strong that you're enjoying it and just loving it and so dedicated to it that the results will eventually follow. I think the results become a byproduct, but it's so great to just see that you are evidently enjoying building for the country so much and delivering that experience so much that you want to keep at it. And that just speaks volumes of, again, your grit and determination and commitment. So amazing to hear that. My second last question is in terms of just like understanding more about, you know, how you're making decisions now, given that the scope of the playground is increasing, right? The scope of problems have increased and there's so many, again, moving parts as an individual that you have to handle, right? So be it hiring, be it operational efficiency, be it administrative overload, be it communication, whatnot, right? Like the list never ends, I'm sure. So how do you ensure that, not work-life balance per se, but how do you ensure that you're prioritizing for the decisions that truly matter? And how do you scale yourself as a founder, right? Because despite the amazing learnings you've had, every day is a new challenge, every day is a new one, right? So how do you ensure that when the problem is getting bigger, larger than you eventually, right? If the problem is going at 2x, you are going at 1.8x, how do you compensate for that by ensuring that your decision-making process or your prioritization spectrum is kept in check?
Right. No, I think so. There's a lot of questions, but I'll say the first one is how's prioritization and how do you handle scale and stuff. I think, like I said, it all goes back to actually just fundamentally two things: build a great team, share your values and ethos for them, and make them make them driven. I think that's all it is, and make sure you know what you're doing. We are building it for the patients. We know that. So any decision we take, it's patient first. Any decision it is, it has to be team first. When you know these two things, I think it helps you, right? You always have a guiding light. You know, when you have to take a decision, hey, is this helping the patient? Okay, check, no, check. Is it good for the team? Yes, no, yes. Right? And you take some hard decisions. So I think it's all about, I'm just maybe reiterating, but it's going back to making sure you know what you're doing. We are doing it for the patients and building a great team. The team is everything. You build a good team and I think you are going to rock. So I think that's some of the best takeaways will tell you. You know, when it comes to prioritization, the idea of building a great team is that, you know, in startup, everything is a priority. Everything is a priority, right? There's nothing which is not a priority because it's priority for somebody, if not you, right? Some team member is making sure it's a priority. So I think the way to sort of work on it is have a distributed leadership. We have distributed work. I have taken up some roles. My co-founders have taken up some roles. Then we have a senior most leadership. We have distributed some roles to them. That's the first part. Divide your larger domains. And be honest about it. I mean, you know, and support that person who is responsible of that domain to take that decision and let him fail at it. Because we are hoping that he's going to get more strikes than more failures. So let him take that course. So give that independence, but divide the domains. Once you divided the domains, I think it has helped us to, you know, help us also to put a lot of metrics to it. I think numbers just don't lie. And beyond everything, if you can put the numbers in place, I think you are in a good place. So divide the leadership, have a great team, divide the domains, put down some North Star metrics for everyone and make sure they know this is for them and let them chase it. So what happens is that there are some North Star metrics which my co-founder chases, some I chase. All of us blend to a one North Star metric saying patient care should scale and pristine should grow. There is actually no other North Star metric, right? Our patient care should improve every day and every day. pristine should grow every day and every day. So all our blended metrics just combine into one. Of course, there's a metrics to check that, but basically that's what it is. The second part is every decision in pristine is data driven. I think it is a lie if we say data is not available. It might not be visible, but it is available. Some sort of data is available. If it is not available, go talk to the patients. It will be available, right? So there is always available. There, if you don't have your own patients or your own customer, talk to somebody else's customers. There is always data available. It is almost any decision in pristine is data driven. You know, of course, we again not perfect, must be making those mistakes, and there is a ground to improve. But the ethos is absolutely clear. If a data is saying this, it doesn't matter what designation, what role, what category, what team you belong to, you are right. If you can bring a logical decision, it is the logic in the room which should win and not the biggest ego or the biggest role or the biggest designation or founder, not founder, nothing changes. So I think build those metrics, look at data and start scaling your decisions. On a lighter note, when you talk about, you know, what are your priorities? Everybody like me will have a 20, 30 priorities. You would have 20 priorities. And we all know pretty much we'll not be able to go, you know, maybe check mark to top two or three of them. So I think it's the Pareto principle, right? 20% of the problem solving will have 80% of that impact. So choose those 20% and go after it. The good part is when you have strong leaders and all of them have their own Paretos and all of them have their own 20% problems, you have a lot of problem solving being done. You have a lot of, creative conflict going on. We actually encourage creative conflict. We are encouraging that, why don't you present your opinion? It's okay to say that this is not done well, or this was meant to be happened differently. There is no shame in saying that we fucked up, right? There is just no shame. Have those. You have so many leaders, all of them have their priorities. All of them are having creative conflict. All of them are fighting to solve it. You will have a lot of problem solving. And I think as an organization, you grow. So I think the end goal is to make sure we keep solving daily and moving, building on. Have a great team. Make sure they know your metrics. Make sure they know their North Stars. Make sure everybody is able to prioritize their 20%. And then everybody should be fighting for the common goal. Kisi ka kaam thoda aage hoga, thoda peeche hoga, but ho sabka jayega. When you know priorities, you know, it'll be done. So I think the best solution should win, and that's how you do it.
Awesome. I think the perfect balance between, you know, getting it objectively right and qualitatively right when you talk about trust plus decision making based on metrics, I think all of that just clubs it up in a great way. I think for the last question, you know, this has been truly spectacular. But I think for the last question, it's simple, right? And I knew I told you I wouldn't make you sound old, but if you had to maybe go back to your 20-year-old self, right? And maybe talk to him about the top 2-3 fundamental guardrails of just going through this journey of starting up, because I'm sure it's not as easy as you're making it sound, right? You made it sound extremely sublime, extremely wonderful, and candidly so. But if you had to just go back to your 20-year-old self and talk to them about, you know, the 3 guardrails of starting up as a founder, what would you tell them, and what would be your final message to everyone listening? I think that would be phenomenal to end with.
I think the first message I would tell everyone is, don't just do it because your friend is doing it or because you read it in a newspaper that this guy bought a fancy home or a car. Don't do that. Do it if you are unable to actually sleep on it. And I have had that experiences a few times in my life, that and with my co-founders, you know, and I can tell you with all the folks I know, everybody said that it was, you know, they wanted to do it so badly that there was just nothing else which went through their mind. And at that point of time, you are not thinking about the rewards. You are just thinking about the excitement of doing it. So be honest to yourself and don't just do it for the heck of doing it because everybody else, most likely you will fail. The second thing is, hardly ever seen a founder or ever spoken to one or taken guidance from one, you know, honestly blessed to have an ecosystem where you can reach out to so many amazing folks where they didn't have to persevere, to solve this. Even somebody who raised a few million dollars day zero had to persevere to use it. So failures are going to come. Be aware of that. It's going to happen. If you're not failing enough, it just means you're not trying. I know everybody says that, so it's nothing new. But failures are going to come. You have to persevere. Don't expect a silver spoon to come to your mouth second day. It's going to be hard, but that's fine. The third part is make sure, and I think this is really the only takeaway which I also keep sharing, you know, to my own self, if I ever forget it, is make sure that you are never, never, never bigger than the mission, the company itself. So do it yourself. Make sure you hit the trenches. Make sure you things which don't scale, especially early on. If you are starting a biscuit business, make sure you bake the business. Make sure you get the ingredients. Make sure you burn your hands a couple of times in the oven. Make sure you deliver it yourself. You know, one of the startups which I did was very similar to what Swiggy does. Back in 2015, Swiggy was only in Bangalore and we started out of NCR. Needless to say, we failed. And of course, Swiggy has done an amazing work. I used to go and deliver. I used to do 30 deliveries a day sitting on a bike to understand, you know, what does delivering to a customer mean? And I think I lost 10 kgs just doing that because I used to go up, you know, Lajpat Nagar, houses, third, fourth, fourth floor, no lifts, day in, day out, distributed pamphlets on the metro station and then went to just deliver food. 30 deliveries a day, the last week at 2 a.m. in the night sometimes, right? But that taught me crazy. And I think that's what I've seen at Urban Club. That's what the best folks did. They did it themselves. That's what we see at Pristine. The most successful leaders are the ones who have done it themselves. So do it yourself first before you share the knowledge. Don't just go out and blab. Do it yourself. Gyan vyan mein kuch nahi rakha. Execute, execute, execute. And have progress. You have to progress, even if it is by a little amount daily. So I think that's what I'll tell everyone. I don't know. That sounds valuable. But that's for me. I think that's, I can't forget that.
No, that's extremely valuable. And thanks so much for that, Harsh. Not only that, just the entire conversation, which in my head just was flowing like a breeze of pure motivational and actionable insights to starting up. And it's so great to just observe your journey in and out. Thank you so much for your time. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did, because this was absolutely fabulous.
Thanks for the time, Raj. Had a really good time and thank you for the opportunity. Enjoyed sharing and almost reliving my journey every day. It gives me goosebumps thinking about all this all the time. So I think there you go. The passion stays.
Thank you so much, Harsh. This has been wonderful.
Incredible. This entire conversation was full of gold and insight. The bias for action and operational efficiency is a testament to how Pristine is handcrafting the patient experience and in turn redefining excellence in healthcare. That was it from the 50th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, handcrafted with Harsh Singh of Pristine Care. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Do follow the podcast on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.